This is the Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. Significant weather events seem to be occurring more often, and they tend to be more destructive. The Inland Northwest has generally avoided the worst of those. We're not in the path of hurricanes. We don't experience strong tornadoes. And the earthquakes that have shaken us so far haven't caused a lot of damage. But we're not immune to the other types of events that cause significant problems. The latest was the windstorm in November 2015 that blew down trees and left tens of thousands of us without power for days. And then there were the destructive fire seasons in 2014 and 2015. They burned millions of acres in eastern and central Washington. And longtime Spokane residents will remember the infamous ice storm from November 1996 that again left thousands in the dark for days. 2 years ago, my colleague Steve Jackson hosted a forum that explored emergency preparedness that included a variety of potential problems from flu epidemics and other medical issues to natural disasters. And we've posted the first hour of that forum on our website. You can go to the Inland Journal page. This hour, we'll focus on the more likely problems. It's time to revisit the lessons learned and remind ourselves of things the region can do to minimize the impact of future events. Joined in studio today by one of the panelists from that event, Jerry Bozarth from the Greater Spokane Emergency Management Agency. We're going to talk this hour about some of the specific threats this region faces and how you can prepare not only for those events, but for emergencies in general. Good to see you, Jerry. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you so much.
You were an important part of that event a couple of years ago. So tell me, when something happens, what's your role? What do you do?
Well, it depends on the actual emergency. It depends on how likely it is to escalate as to whether if I'm duty officer, we have a duty officer on scene or on call all the time. And so when I'm a duty officer, if we get a call, I'm immediately involved if it escalates to a certain level. And then if I need the rest of our staff to come in, then I give them a call. And once, you know, something like windstorm happens, then basically my role is emergency operations. I'm basically an emergency operations manager at times, but we all fill a variety of roles.
So you get called in, obviously, for the big things, but mm-hmm. do you also get called in for smaller things, traffic accidents, other water main leaks, that sort of stuff?
Not unless it rises to a certain level, but we do monitor that because, you know, we call it a cascading event. Something can actually roll out, seem rather innocuous. You know, a good example, during Snowmageddon in 2008-09, I was working with the fire chief as duty officer on Christmas Eve, and we had a vault fire downtown, and many will probably remember that. And it was significant because we were working together for about 8 hours to decide when we were going to pull the trigger on having evacuations. And, you know, it was a variety of partners that helped out. Red Cross was helping us. STA was helping us. They kept several buses on scene running because it was cold and residents can go in those buses. They kept the plaza open. So there was a variety of things. Luckily, we didn't have to do that, but we learned a lot of lessons from that.
You talked about a certain threshold. What is that threshold?
It varies. It really varies. You know, basically a third alarm fire, for instance, we're normally included. We help get resources for the fire department and support them. We are a coordinating agency in general.
Steve Jackson has joined us. Steve was part of the host of that series a couple of years ago, and so he's going to be with us for a little bit. So let's talk about the local hazards that we're most likely to run into. We talked about windstorm and ice storm. We've talked about wildfires. Are those the most likely for us to see?
Well, it's some of the hazards that we face in Spokane County. There are others. You know, we have man-made, too, such as hazardous material incidents and things like that. But you know, if we look at historical trends, it tends to be weather-related. It tends to be ice storm in 1996, what I affectionately call Snowmageddon in 2008-09. That was a very trying time for many people. And then windstorm. And then last year, we had our flooding event. And although it affected less people, it was very significant for the people that it did affect because it was flooding like we've actually never seen. The ground was frozen. We had extraordinary rains in February and early March. That there was nowhere for that water to go. And some extraordinary flooding on the Spokane River, too, although less impact to homeowners. But many people probably saw that there were certain roads that they normally take that they had to drive around and detour.
So as we're making that transition now from winter towards spring, are there things that you're especially worried about right now or keeping your eye on?
Well, we were certainly worried that we might have another year like we had last year. And we just don't know. We don't know what the weather is going to do. We don't know if we're going to get some, significant rains this spring. At least the ground, it seems to be warming up, and so we shouldn't have a repeat of what we had last year.
Oh, yeah. I was just thinking when you were talking about different kinds of storms, it just seems like we've had a lot more unusual weather events, and this maybe isn't even accurate, but as a personal experience, it seems like we've had a lot of unusual, like kind of late summer extreme thunderstorms in addition to those windstorms that you were talking about, like in November of, mm-hmm. what was it, 15? But yeah, I'm just remembering several, because I live out in the rural part of the county, and yeah, constantly experiencing these big storms where we couldn't even get out of our neighborhood because we had trees down over our little country road and so mm-hmm. forth, so.
Yeah, well, it was very significant, for instance, in windstorm. But yes, last year during the summer, we actually had a record amount of days that was over 90 degrees. That's significant.
Yeah, and that was coupled at one point with severe power outages in some locales. I know this, again, speaking from experience, we didn't have power for 3 days when it was 95 plus, and there we were worrying about, trying to store food in the refrigerator and so forth.
Yeah, that can be absolutely a challenge. Anytime there's a power outage, it's one of the most significant things that can happen. That's risk to life, in the county, whether it's during the summer for those that cannot tolerate the heat, but definitely during the winter, and we found that happens widespread more often, 1996, 2015, mm-hmm. Hundreds of thousands of people without power for a significant period of time during cold weather. That can be very dangerous, life-threatening.
So if you think about all the different types, and we'll get into some of the other types, if you're sort of guessing as to what type of hazard you're going to run into, then how can you get prepared in the best way? Can you sort of generally get ready for something like that?
Well, in general, what we call it in the business is we call it all hazards preparedness. It's kind of a global approach to preparedness because, like you said, we don't know what's coming down the pike. So it's possible that we could have a winter storm. We could have some significant event that's very quick. And for that, we need to be prepared in an all hazards manner. So it's having a kit, having a communication plan, knowing what you should do for you and your family and your pets, all of that sort of thing. And you can find lots of information on our website at gsem.us or ready.gov, which is the government site.
Jerry Bozarth from the Greater Spokane Emergency Management Agency is with us. When we think about oil trains or coal train accidents that might run through our city of Spokane, what are the things that you think about and worry about when it comes to something like that?
Well, one of the significant things that we have done for a possible train derailment or any hazardous material spill of any kind, which could be a truck or any sort of thing like that, is we do lots of practice, which we call exercises. So we do a lot of exercises with first responders. We actually have, for several years now, there's a grant process that we are heavily involved in with getting training for the regional hazardous materials team. And so, there's a lot of training and there's a lot of preparedness that goes into what ifs.
From what I understand, Spokane County is one of the leaders in the state when it comes to sort of coordinating all of those efforts.
Absolutely.
And why that coordination effort? Why did Spokane decide that this is something that is important?
Well, I think, Doug, what we call it is we call it an emergency management system, okay? We're not just an emergency management department. what we have is we're kind of a coordinating body for first responders, for nonprofit organizations, for instance, Red Cross and others, faith-based groups even. And we prepare all of those people to come together at time of event, and which happened to, you know, a great extent during the windstorm, because we've got to help citizens and we can't do it alone.
So let's hear from our 2016 forum. This is Brian Schaefer, who is at the time he was the assistant fire chief, is now the current fire chief in the city of Spokane, talking about this very talk.
We all have different missions, but what the agency the sheriff's in charge of with the emergency management does, using emergency support functions or ESS, they design individualized plans that bring all the resources together and make sure that they're working on the same page, kind of like a playbook in football, or if you're a coach, when the coach pulls out the playbook, and in our case, our comprehensive emergency plan, everybody knows their role, and then they exercise it. They bring us all together on a very frequent basis, on a routine basis, and we exercise the plan so that at 3 o'clock in the morning, when our pagers go off for some type of a disaster, regardless of what the risk is, we all come together and we know our positions and know our place.
Jerry, quick follow-up from Steve here. I'm just wondering, I'm sure you do, but can you talk a little bit about your efforts then? What about, you know, when we have these region-wide kind of things, like you mentioned the windstorm, do you have all these lines of communication already set up with all of our outlying counties? I'm thinking like Pend Oreille or Stevens or Ferry or anybody else that was affected. And I know there's all these myriad of agencies, so I just wonder, is there kind of a central command you can communicate with them, and if you have special needs or if they have special needs and need help from us down here? Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, we actually have a great relationship with what we call Region 9, which is most of Eastern Washington, and with all of the emergency managers in Region 9. And we hold a monthly meeting with them here in Spokane. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have a very close relationship. And so if we need assistance or they need assistance, and quite honestly, we have we're five people in the office right now. We should be seven people. We're in the process of hiring a couple. But we're the largest emergency management office in Eastern Washington in this area.
And here's kind of another follow-up. And I'm thinking back, and Doug and I both had a background where we were at one of the commercial news stations in town. And we both had experience during the firestorm and ice storms of mm-hmm. the 90s. So this is slightly far afield, but I'm thinking in terms of when we had all these people out in the county and in the area who had specific needs for help, but they couldn't really ask, you know, like a county agency or something for this. So it was kind of up to the media to help. And in this case, that specific station, we did as good as we could by actually taking phone calls on the air. Doug and I were talking about this today thinking, man, how would we do this if we had to? So, I mean, maybe can you offer us any guidelines? And I'm thinking in terms of things like this. During the firestorm, there was all these folks out in Nine Mile that were calling in to the station saying, hey, I really need help coordinating. I've got, you know, I live on a farm and I've got all these horses. Can someone help me? And all we were doing in the media was passing these requests along over the air. And then we would, you know, act as a clearinghouse. People would call up with info. Mm-hmm. Have you guys mm-hmm. had to deal with that kind of thing? Or are you just hoping that maybe in the media we can kind of take care of that?
Oh, no, we're not hoping. We have a plan for that.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, if you have specifics.
Yeah. No, hope doesn't work with us. we have to have a plan and then exercise it and train to it. So I do remember, you know, what you're talking about. I actually moved here a month after Firestorm, which was unique.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not intimately familiar with it because I wasn't here, but I was in Seattle, so I kind of know what happened, and I obviously...
But you were here for Ice Storm.
I was here for Ice Storm.
Okay.
I was not part of emergency management at that time, but I do remember the radio station that you're talking about and the individual that was on for many hours mm-hmm. Relaying those requests and that sort of thing. So we have learned, how to do that since then. We have a phone system in town called 211. So it's, you know, just dial up 211. It is an informational line. And during emergencies, and we've used this with a lot of success, especially during windstorm, we had anyone that needed assistance that couldn't find any other way to do whatever they needed done to call 211. And then as a clearinghouse, you know, we brought that to our emergency operations center and figured out what agency or what nonprofit group or, you know, what faith-based group could help that individual with their need.
So the individual that called could leave a message then? Is that what they're doing?
No message.
They're talking to an actual dispatcher of sorts.
Exactly.
Okay.
It is a widespread system. I mean, it is a national system, but it is run here locally in town, and it is 211, and so people can call that. It's similar to the city's 311. You know, informational line. Right. But when emergencies happen, we have them expand their hours and we publicize that in the media. So then that way, if someone needs something, they can call, especially vulnerable populations or the elderly or something. You know, especially if a good example is if we get overwhelming snow, we know there's many people that cannot shovel their own walkway, their driveway, that sort of thing. And that's a danger if they cannot get out of their home in an emergency or whatever. And so we have actually Boy Scout groups and others and faith-based groups that will go out on call and go out and clear those people out so they don't have that danger.
And I'm just going to say, and I can imagine that the comments in there could run the gamut from everything with people with animals to whatever kind of need, right?
Right. And when it comes to the animals, we have a local group that we work very closely with. It's called HART, Humane Emergency Animal Rescue Teams. And they're a group of volunteers that help with animal evacuation and different problems that might come up. They also do this sheltering. During windstorm, we had a very successful situation where we co-located pets at a shelter, because we have in the past, and this is a national problem, that if you can't take your pets to a Red Cross shelter, a lot of people won't go, and so that puts people in danger, and we don't want that. We want to make sure that people have a place to go during emergencies and disasters and bring their pets, and so their pets are safe, and it's a peace of mind issue.
So along the lines of communications, how do you use social media now that that's more developed than it was, say, in even, 2014, 2015? Do you have those lines that you're able to reach out to people in ways that you couldn't before?
Absolutely. Pretty much everybody's got a Facebook page and Twitter account, and some agencies have Instagram and things like that. And so, we try to publicize that. We have a better webpage than we've ever had before, giving information on how to prepare if you want to get involved in a volunteer group, for instance, all sorts of things at gsem.us.
So we just heard from Brian Schaefer. We've got Brian Schaefer from our 2016 forum on another thing, and that is, what are the lessons learned from 2014 and 2015? Let's hear what he has to say.
One thing that we realized really quickly was we don't have the immediate depth that we need in Spokane County, especially when our neighbors all around, including Idaho, are on fire. And we're sending resources all over the place to help them. And we also had our own project fires in Spokane County. Unprecedented time for the state. We reached out outside of the United States to bring in qualified firefighters from around the world. Never happened before. Never happened before where we've had such a diverse group of people in Spokane County staged at our Air Force Base. We got to utilize parts of the plan that we mentioned before that we've never used. So, of course, there's opportunities there to kind of work out the kinks.
Now, Brian's referring to the fact that you now have the ability to bring in folks from other parts of the country, other parts of the state. How does that work?
Well, that's pretty much, a mutual aid agreement type of thing that works through the fire service. But we, going back to how we would request assistance from the state and then FEMA and that sort of thing, it obviously goes to the state first. But we expand and go locally first, I guess is the way I should put it. So we look for partners in the local area, the other counties, for instance, and they look to us. And if,
so you get on the phone?
Yep, get on the phone, talk to the
what do you got?
Emergency
you got
managers, Can you give us a hand? If you're not part of the emergency or the disaster, maybe you can give us a hand. And so that's where we start. Then we go to, you know, and then if that doesn't work, or it expands to the point that we need state help, then we go to the State Emergency Management Division. And then they would go to FEMA if it became an incredibly overwhelming disaster.
So is it a bureaucratic process when you get up higher in that levels if you need the Forest Service hotshots or something to fly in? Or is it still easy to, you know, make a phone call, worry about the paperwork later?
Oh, no, it's not worry about the paperwork later. It's never that. But there's a very, very set in place process that we go through. And there's a hierarchy, you know, again. And once you get to, you know, the state level, the governor, you know, for instance, in a presidentially declared disaster, we have to, you know, make a case that we had, and we've had three in the last 10 years. So we had Snowmageddon, we had the windstorm, and then even last year with the flooding. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that last year with the flooding, we had we had millions of dollars. We haven't quite calculated it all, but we had millions of dollars worth of damage to the county roadways. And so we're still working through that issue now with the funding through FEMA because it was a presidentially declared disaster.
So there we get into another issue. We've got federal disaster areas. We've got state disaster areas. We have local disaster. What does it matter?
Well, it only matters from a standpoint of how we can help the citizens at the time of event and then afterwards. Local, you know, what they say in our business is disasters are always local. And, you know, we're kind of, every community is kind of on its own to figure out how they're going to take care of the particular emergency or disaster until it rises to a level that reaches different thresholds. And that gets back to the state. And then, you know, once it's beyond the state's capability, then we get into the federal area.
And wasn't there some sort of controversy, too? I'm thinking back to whenever Governor Inslee had to make a request to the federal government for an emergency declaration fairly recently, and I'm thinking it's probably fires. But they provided some money, but it wasn't going to go to individual homeowners. In other words, the feds did say, okay, it is an emergency, but only at this level.
Well, there's two programs, and what you may be referring to, Steve, is the fact that in the past three presidentially declared disasters, mm-hmm. we have made a request. We've basically tried to get citizens some relief. And been denied all three times. And right. And the unfortunate part with that is that we never have an overwhelming disaster for the citizens as far as their homes, because it only covers their primary residences.
Okay.
And so there's calculations that have to be done. And we, even with the flooding last year, we had 89 people report flood damage on our website when we asked people to report. We know there was far more than that had damage, but, you know, they either didn't get the word or decided not to report, whatever it was, whatever right. the reason was. And, you know, all of that damage is, the vast majority is not covered by insurance because flood damage is a separate
policy.
Yeah, it's a separate policy. And if you don't live by a river or a body of water, you know, you have to decide whether flood insurance is right for you.
Right.
And so if you don't live in a floodplain, you don't live near a river, whatever, you have to decide. And this was an extraordinary event that we've never seen before, with frozen ground, melt water from the snow, and a lot of rain on top of it. And it usually went into, unfortunately, people's basements. So it ruined a lot of finished basements that we dealt with. Now, the good news is that for those that couldn't do it on their own, we did set up a long-term recovery group in the community. That's the second time we've done this, and we attempted to assist those that couldn't pay for, you know, the damage themselves and take care of it, whether they're vulnerable populations, whether they were just socioeconomically challenged, whatever the case may be. We attempted to help, you know, all those individuals that we could.
Jerry Bozarth, and we've posted portions of the program that Jerry participated in a couple of years ago, our health and safety forum. That's on our website at SpokanePublicRadio.org. if there was something that you missed today. And much of what we talked about was also covered then. We were also, I think, talking about flu pandemics and other things in that we've posted. Inland Journal is Spokane Public Radio's weekly public affairs program. The podcasts are available at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Send your comments to InlandJournal@KPBX.org, or you can leave a message on our listener line at 509-232-6904. Thank you for your support of the program. You helped to make it possible. I'm Doug Dan Vornick.